Thursday, January 21st, and you're listening to the Geek News Central podcast, sponsored by GoDaddy.com. Geek News Central is a partner of the Tech Podcast Network. Have a great show for you today. I'm here, of course, in Central Florida, in Jacksonville, Florida. Actually, I'm in the northern tip of Florida. What am I talking about? But I got a great show for you. Strap in. Here it comes.
Coming to you from a dimly lit hotel room with bad Wi-Fi and not enough power outlets, here's everyone's favorite jet-lagged geek, Todd Cochran.
Aloha and welcome to the Geek News Central podcast, coming to you as live as it can be from Jacksonville, Florida via my portable podcasting studio. Hey everyone, welcome to the show. Again, my name is Todd Cochran. Of course, I encourage you to get over to geeknewscentral.com, check out all the great content, and of course, all of the archive podcasts available via the podcast link on the website. You want to make sure you get signed up for our newsletter. The newsletter gets you the show notes. Everything that I cover during tonight's show will be included in those show notes. And really, it's kind of a way to remind you that there's a new show up and available online. And, of course, we don't share your email address with anyone. That stays internal to Geek News Central and our family of listeners, our Ohana out there. I do want to thank all of our Ohana for being subscribed to the show. Of course, if you're new to the podcast, Ohana is a word in Hawaii that means family. And being that I originally or normally record this show out of my studio in Honolulu, the Ohana, of course, welcome to the podcast. And I'm glad if you're new to the show that you'll become part of the family listeners as well. Well, it's been kind of an interesting day here in Jacksonville because I was meeting with some clients, as I have been all week. And about 12 o'clock, they said, "Hey, Todd, there's, you know, we're going to have some bad weather scheduled to come through and thunderstorms." Well, you guys know my affinity with thunderstorms, being that I live in Honolulu. We have about one thunderstorm a year, and being that it's actually technically winter down here in Florida, even though that I've been running around with no coat all week, they say thunderstorms this time of year are very rare, and so I got a heck of a show this afternoon, but it was a little more than I actually anticipated because we were in a meeting at about 2 o'clock, and one of the receptionist came into the conference room that we were at and said, "Hey, tornado warning." And I'm like, "Where was the watch?" And it turns out that there was a tornado that had been spotted, I guess, about 9 miles from our location. So it wasn't too close, but that was kind of an interesting scenario to have a tornado warning in January. And so everyone got everyone's attention real quick, and we were all looking out the window, and I had my HD camera with me, and I got it all up. I had a thing all, and they're looking at me like, "What are you doing with your camera?" I'm like, "Hey, always prepared. New media, you're always prepared. If there's going to be a tornado, I'm going to get it, you know?" And they all laughed about that, but we had a great meeting, and so plenty of rain here in the Jacksonville area today. And everything kind of wrap up business tomorrow, and was been texting back and forth with my daughter who's down in Tampa, and I said, "Okay, are you, you know, you got time for dad this weekend? Are you partying or what are you doing?" Well, she's actually being responsible and working her part-time job this weekend, full-time college student. So I'm like, "When do you have available?" And she texts me the times. I'm like, "Yeah, I guess it's either going to be breakfast or late night dinner." So I'll find time to squeeze in and go down to drive down to Tampa and see her and spend a little quality time with her between her job sets. So I look forward to doing that this weekend. Hey, I want to welcome listeners from 160 countries worldwide. And, of course, I want to welcome those of you that are on Ustream right now that are watching the show live. 99.99999% of the audience, of course, is subscribed to the show and gets the show via audio download. And you can do that as well, of course, by visiting geeknewscentral.com and subscribing to either via Zune Marketplace, via iTunes. You can use a variety of different applications out there. There are podcast applications for either the iPhone, for your BlackBerry, for your Android, whatever type of phone you may have. I'm sure there's an app out there for you to subscribe to podcasts. Please do so. That way you won't miss a show. You'll get them downloaded automatically. And you, of course, should be here and listen to one of the greatest shows in tech. So I'm sure someone's going to say, Todd, your show is far from one of the greatest shows in tech. But after 540-some episodes and the number of listeners listening to the show, I think I can say that at this point. Of course, we're using VidBlaster tonight. And my normal graphics, I was thinking this afternoon, I really need to update the graphics that is being used with the VidBlaster software. I threw that together in about 2 minutes about 6 months ago. And you would think that I would spend 10 minutes and just do a good overlay. So that's on my agenda to do this weekend, is to load that up and actually make it look decent instead of as gaudy as it is right now. But also, I'm going to be looking for another camera, because what happened was, is typically I use the HP webcam that's off the machine that's using VidBlaster, and I use a Logitech webcam. The Logitech webcam's been great, good color on it, but the HP webcam that is built into the machine that I use VidBlaster on, it is two thumbs down. It's not working very good at all, and I can't find any way to color control it. So I'll look for another webcam this weekend and plug it in. You know, when I'm home, I've got the TriCaster, and I got everything all lined up in the studio, and boy, I miss having the high-level detail that is normally comes with being able to switch to screen views and everything. So tonight, we're just here in my hotel room, and I hope that you enjoy the show. All right, let me go ahead and I got a couple of announcements for you. I'm looking for a copy editor for GNC. What I'm finding is I'm putting up a lot of content that we had shot out at the Consumer Electronics Show. I've, rushing usually very late in the evening, putting three or four videos up a night, and I'm going back the next day and reading those articles, and I'm going, ye gads, they're horrible. So if there is anyone that's available, I need a copy editor, and I think I'm going to hire someone to do full-time copy editing for me at Geek News Central, basically taking care of, cleaning up my mess, just for a time perspective. Let me know if you want to do that. I'll get you started right away. And also, I'm looking for a few more bloggers, and we've got a team of bloggers already, but we don't have any set requirements on posting requirements, when you can post, how much you post, how little you can post, and so forth. So I am looking for a few more bloggers at Geek News Central, and if you've applied in the past and I haven't replied, please do so. Please let me know if you're interested. You can email me, of course, at geeknews@gmail.com. As always, if you have comments on tonight's show, please feel free to drop me a comment via our voicemail hotline. It's available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, at area code 619-342-7365. I do have a pretty lengthy voicemail to go into at the end of the show tonight, along with listener email as well. As you guys heard tonight, I used the Trucker Tom intro. Haven't used that a while on the road, but considering this hotel is dark, dingy, the bandwidth is slow, Tom, your intro for the show is absolutely perfect. So what else is going on here? Nothing really. It's been a pretty calm week. So what that means for you guys is that we're going to be able to get into the content a lot earlier than I normally do. But let's take care of a little business here. Of course, if you're looking for a domain name, if you're looking for a dedicated server, virtual dedicated server, or shared hosting account, whatever it may be in the online world, looking for a webmail host, something to that effect, you definitely want to check out GoDaddy.com. They've got a great line of products and services over there. Of course, Geek News Central and all my websites run on GoDaddy servers, stand behind the product. We use them, and very faithfully so. And I think that you will find that their service is exceptional. And if it's not exceptional, I want you to email me and let me know that you have an issue, because I definitely have a connection to some of the top hierarchy at GoDaddy if you've had a problem with any of the services that you may have bought in the past. So definitely keep me in mind, though, when you get to that checkout counter, because you can save a lot of money by using my promo code. You can find the link on Geek News Central to my promo codes. It lists 7 or 8 promo codes. You can save money there. A couple of popular ones are ComSale. You get .coms at $7.49. You can use the Todd20 code to get 20% off on a 1-year shared hosting account. Todd will save you 10% on non-domain orders. Of course, Geek5 will save you 15% on orders $20 or more. And thanks for GoDaddy for being a continued sponsor here at Geek News Central. Sometimes you got to travel. Sometimes you have to meet with clients. But when you don't have to, and you know, with all this heavy weather that has hit much of the eastern seaboard today, you know, it makes getting to meetings close to impossible. So skip the flights, skip the drive, use GoToMeeting to host an online meeting instead. Everyone really just logs on to the GoToMeeting.com website, and they can see your computer desktop on their computer screen with just a click. You can host sales presentations, training sessions, on product demos right from your computer. And the best part is you can also just use your onboard camera on your computer and the mic built into it to use the voice IP service to be essentially have a discussion. And you know, we use this as a virtual meeting room many times when I'm on travel, and my team that is spread across 4 different states, when they need to reach me, really all I do is I leave a GoToMeeting session up and online. They know the code. I've shared it with them that day for to get into it, and they pop in and say, "Hey Todd, hey, check this out. Hand over the screen. I want to show you something." So basically, I can actually just turn the screen over to them, and they can show me their screen in reverse, and we can go through something real quick. They bounce out, we leave the session up and running, and then as the other team members need to talk to me about different things, they can. And of course, one thing Angela did here 2 days ago was he met with a fellow podcaster who really needed to go over some of the details of what we're doing with the PowerPress plugin for WordPress, and he did a full demo with Cliff, and you know, spent about 1 hour and 15 minutes with him. And I told him, I said, "Angela, while you're doing that, you know, ask Cliff if it's okay that you record it, so that you know we can share that with folks later." So he did that. He recorded the meeting. He actually recorded the session, recorded the audio, and what it allows us to do is put that up online. And not only will he just essentially saved himself an hour of time with other people, we can put that up again, make it available. And it's a great way to save time and money. So you can try GoToMeeting free for 30 days, but you must visit GoToMeeting.com/techpodcast. That's GoToMeeting.com/techpodcast for a free 30-day trial. Okay, let me go ahead here and bounce into Chrome and load up tonight's content that I have found for you. And we've got some great content, some great tech content tonight for you. Those of you that are on Verizon and using getting their basically their cable offering through Fios, whether it may be just that you're getting the television service with Verizon, you'll be happy to know that today the FCC has closed a loophole which has been keeping HD programming off Fios on the Eastern Seaboard. Verizon has, in 2009, filed a program access complaint with the FCC, charging that Cablevision continuously has denied Verizon's access under any terms to the HD versions of its regional sports programming in the New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut area. So, you know, it's essentially big team stuff here, New York Knicks, New York Rangers. So, of course, those of you that like the Devils as well, the New Jersey Devils, you now, in a very short order, will obviously be able to get access to the HD sports content that Cablevision has denied Verizon access to. I didn't even know that this was an issue, but apparently the folks at Cablevision have been running ads that they are the exclusive HD sports content provider, and now they won't be able to say this anymore because of this new ruling by the FCC. So we'll see what happens with this, and it's a good news for consumers all around. If you haven't noticed today, you may have gotten a notice to update to Firefox version 3.6. Firefox 3.6 was released today, and they've got some new features. You can personalize the browser to make it kind of look the way you want it to look like, and it's relatively easy. And there's some lightweight theming that's made available now, so you can apply a custom visual style to your browser. There's also a new plugin verifier, so that it basically goes out and looks at all the plugins. It's called Plugin Check. It's protecting users from plugin vulnerabilities. So it's basically another one checking to make sure it's the plugin is viable with the current version, but it's also making sure that the plugin is not doing something it shouldn't be doing within your browser window. So this is pretty cool. This the plugin check feature was made possible by a web service that Mozilla launched last year, which matches the user's plugin version against a remote database of plugin information. The backend web service called PFS2 is also used to help users find appropriate plugins to enable support for certain kinds of content. This is an article that I found over on ArsTechnica.com. Of course, I'll have the link up to that article, the source article, and all source articles in tonight's show notes, which you can subscribe to on the website at geeknewscentral.com. How many of you use passwords like 12345, 12345, 6, 12345678, 9, or even just the word password? Well, apparently a website called RockYou, and I don't even know if I have an account over there, but RockYou was a site that offered widgets for use on social networking sites. They were able to get access. Actually, hackers were able to get access to 32 million, yes, 32 million usernames and passwords. And this is crazy because, well, maybe it was just the passwords, not the usernames as well. But a hacker was able to get access to those, and he left a file with all the passwords on a public site. And security firms analyzed them. And about a third of the passwords are less than 6 characters, and half of the passwords are vulnerable to dictionary attacks. The most common password, believe it or not, was 123456. So here's the thing that's really disgusting here, folks, is that anyone with a internet connection using a standard dictionary attack would really be able to, with the right username, get access to accounts in very minimal amount of time. And this is not good. This is, you know, if you're out there and you're using passwords that you can find in the dictionary, you need to start changing those as soon as you can. Now, the bad thing is that the folks over at RockYou really didn't explain too much about their security breach, but it's pretty ridiculous that the company stored all its user information as plain text in a database that was vulnerable to an SQL injection. So if you use that website and you're using the same password on multiple websites, be forewarned. All right, Apple may demote Google in favor of Bing for iPhone searches. Apparently, Apple is currently in negotiations with Microsoft to replace the default search engine in mobile Safari on the iPhone with Bing. Wow, I wonder if they're going to give people an option to choose Bing or Google, or if it's just, I don't even know. On the iPhone, can you actually change the default search client in Safari? I've never even tried, to be honest with you. But Google obviously is planning to launch its own operating system, dubbed Chrome OS. So maybe Apple here is getting a little leery of Google's dominance and maybe worried, obviously, that with the Droid and Google's new phone coming out, that, again, maybe Google's getting a little bit too big for their britches, and maybe Microsoft's coming to the table with a big amount of cash for search on Bing versus Google from Safari. Now, it really won't change things for those of you that are using the Google plugin, because you can still search right from the Google plugin into Google search engine. All right, Microsoft has patched the Google hack flaw in Internet Explorer. As a matter of fact, I got an update this afternoon. So that has been released. Those of you that have Windows machines, you'll probably be getting notice of an update to your computer. It's a pretty quick update, but it does require a reboot, and then the machine does 2 or 3 things before it restarts. But the patch is available, and it's for all supported versions of Windows. And so there's everything from, wow, look at this list. They have a huge list of patches here for a variety of different browsers. And it goes all the way back to Internet Explorer 5 to Internet Explorer 8. for 64-bit Itanium, the 32-bit, 64-bit versions, and so forth. So be aware that those updates are on the way. Make sure you update your machines, especially if you're using Internet Explorer on a regular basis. All right, YouTube has decided to do movie rentals on their website. And I also did a refresh of the YouTube website today. I noticed that. We've been pushing, or actually I've been pushing, a lot of videos that we have approved on, that from CES that we've approved on Blip to my YouTube account, and those are actually available earlier than what's on my website. So if you haven't been over to my YouTube page in a while and you want to watch the videos quicker, there is a pile of them up that have not yet made their presence on Geek News Central. So if you want a fast way to get ahead of the ball curve, or bell curve for watching the content that we pushed out, make sure you get over there. There's a link to my YouTube website at geeknewscentral.com. But going back to the movie rental business, the fledgling service will go live tomorrow, and initially only five films will be available to rent. The movies will come from the 2009 and 2010 Sundance Film Festival and will only be available in the United States. So those of you in the UK, sorry, or anywhere else. So apparently here, the videos are going to range in prices from, I don't know why they put the, oh, this was a BBC article, that's why they put the pound, it's going to be offered for $3.99 US, and you'll be able to watch the video over a 48-hour period. How many of you would actually watch videos over YouTube? I'm going to tell you, the Roku, or the Boxy, or the New, or the Pop Box, which is getting ready to come out, that's the way to watch videos on the internet. I'm going to tell you, I'm a big fan of the Roku. Actually, I told you on the last show we're going to be giving some Rokus away every month over at techpodcast.tv when we launch the site. The site's not quite ready yet. Angelo's still working on some of the features that I wanted included in it, and hopefully we'll have that up either this weekend or early next week. It's just taking a little longer than I wanted to, but we're going to be giving away a Roku every month. And be able to, a cool way to get one if you can't afford one or don't have one already, or have a chance to win one, maybe even give one away. We did have some, actually I got to get the information from Jeffrey, but from our NBC Universal content at CBS, we did have two winners for a Roku and also a Pogo plug. So if you didn't get involved in those contest giveaways, don't worry. We're going to start a few small minor contests here at GNC in the near future. As you guys know, earlier in the year, actually just before, maybe right after Christmas, I announced my new salary replacement plan, where I talked about where we would scale down giveaways in order to build up reserves enough to help hire someone permanently to basically come in and be a staff member at GNC. And so the salary replacement plan donations are going pretty good at this point. I want to thank those of you that are contributing. If you're not familiar with what I am talking about here, you'll find a link to it in the second column of the website. There's an explanation of the strategy that I'm employing there. Obviously, there's advertisers on this show, but the advertisers right now pay my salary and not someone else's. So we're looking to continue to move forward, and hopefully by the end of the year be able to bring someone on if we're able to generate enough revenue from my salary replacement plan. So anyway, that's on the main page at Geek News Central. Let's talk a little bit about Nokia. Nokia is challenging Google with free navigation tool. Nokia, the world's biggest maker of mobile phones, is offering navigation on its Ovi Map service free, challenging smartphones using Google incorporated software. Nokia is saying this is going to help defend selling pricing for products that contain global positioning system technology. Now, here's the question. Why are they, I guess it's for navigation. I thought Google Maps was offering free navigation on the Android already. I don't believe it's available for the iPhone. Well, this is what Nokia's made available. If you have a Nokia Ovi phone, that's OG, OYJ, it's not Ovi, you can get Business Week definitely made a typo here. It says Nokia OYG on the first sentence and OVI Maps on the second sentence. So I believe it's Ovi Maps. That makes more sense. But anyway, that's available on those particular devices. So anyway, If you got a Nokia phone, definitely check it out. All right, Verizon has been largely criticized here over the last couple of days because CNET published a story Wednesday headlining that Verizon ends service of alleged illegal downloaders. I don't know if this actually had broke before the last show or not, but what Verizon has been doing and what they subsequently are denying, but CNET is basically coming back and saying, oh yes, this is what they said, is that after Verizon sends a couple of warning letters to customers that are using peer-to-peer services, they are purportedly, according to CNET, and being sourced by someone very high in the food chain at Verizon, actually cutting individuals' accounts. They're cutting their access. Now, we shouldn't be surprised that they're doing this, but no one has openly said that they are really, you know, cutting customers or, you know, making customers deleting customers' accounts. But this is one of the things that was said here in this interview. Carnoy also noted in his follow-up interview with Henson, Henson's a person at Verizon, when he asked her about cutting off customers accused of copyright infringement, have you been forced to pass on anybody's info to a copyright owner since you started sending emails out? Carnoy wrote Henson in his email, also, about how many people have you cut off? Hundreds, thousands, looking for any numbers you can give. Henson came back and said in her email response, David, we don't give out these numbers, but I can tell you that they are small. Our impression is that litigation in this area is significantly down, and to the extent that we get subpoenas or court orders, they are isolated and not all widespread. Same goes for disconnections. These are not things we want to do, and the purpose of the notification program is to educate customers and to give them every opportunity to understand and take action to download legally. So, if you've gotten a couple of letters for Verizon, be careful because your access is probably going to be cut next. And if I was a Verizon Fios customer and I lost my access, I think I would scream for about a week. So be aware there, Verizon users, okay? All right, AMD, largely thanks to the settlement by the good folks at Intel, have become profitable for the first time in 3 years in the fourth quarter of 2009. The company reported a net income of $1.18 billion during that quarter that ended December 26, an improvement over a loss of $1.44 billion reported in the fourth quarter. The company reported diluted earnings of share of $1.52. So even though they would have been profitable without the settlement, it would have been very, very small. So we'll see what happens with AMD in the future. And hopefully the Intel-AMD battles will continue and they'll continue to push each other in chip performance. But I think AMD has a little bit to catch up now. And as a disclaimer, of course, I do own stock in Intel. All right, on Computer World, storage wrinkle, 4,500 flash drives left at the cleaners. How many of you have got flash drives? I've got one here. Let me actually pull it out of the computer. That's pretty cool. And those of you that are on Ustream can see it. And I actually did a blog post about this because we talked to the folks at Verbatim at CES. This is actually an 8-gig USB stick. As you can see, I got this one attached to another USB stick. It's another 8-gig. But if you look at the difference in sizes here, they're pretty small, right? And the reason I have this one attached to this drive is when I'm on travel, I don't travel with car keys. But when I'm home, this particular, and those of you that are on the audio program, you can't see this, but this Verbatim Tiny and Tough USB stick is about the size of half a stick of gum or less, and it's just about as thick. And I love this little stick because it goes right on my keychain, and I know wherever I go, I have my keys with me, and the chances of me putting this in the laundry are not real high. So what they have done is the folks at Computer World have done a study, and that they found lost thumb drives numbered about 4,500 that were left with cleaners in the United States. And this was through, I guess, some polling they did. Now, while that number may appear high, the survey of 100 dry cleaners of London this month have revealed that the number of flash sticks left at cleaners since last April declined by half. So apparently people are remembering to take these out of their pockets. Now, I've washed a number of these, regular USB, USB memory sticks, but I have yet to wash this one when it's actually attached to my keychain. Now, it's kind of funny to see my keychain up on my desk next to my computer when this is plugged in. But, you know, you close your laptop, and guess what you're going to do? You're not going to walk off with your keys laying on a table because, it just doesn't work that way. But this thing is, I do like these little tiny and tough verbatim memory sticks. So you can check them out. Of course, there's a video on Geek News Central at this time about this exact stick and some other products that they have. But another place that sticks have been lost in high numbers are in taxis. Of course, a lot of cell phones are left in taxis. And we got some videos coming up here shortly that'll really prevent you from ever losing your cell phone again by some basic alarm system attached to it. And it's really a alarm system attached to my phone. Is the device going to be bigger than my phone? Oh, no. Wait till you guys see this product. It's really, really cool. So I've done a little tease here for you for some of the stuff that's upcoming at geeknewscentral.com. All right, NASA today, and this is an article over on Wired, has basically revealed what I would say would be one of the coolest new possible transportation devices that I've seen in a long time, and I really want one. It's called the Puffin. It's basically a one-man, I guess you don't want to call it, it's not a really an airplane, but what it is, it has a flight system built similar to the V-22 Osprey. Those of you that know what the V-22 knows, that the rotors actually tilt on the Osprey, so when it takes off, the rotors are kind of, they're semi-pointing forward, and then as it transitions into flight, the rotors level out. Well, this NASA Puffin is a design that is being put forth by the folks over there. And the concept was being presented at the American Helicopter Society meeting in San Francisco. And this is electric-powered, can cruise between 140 and 300 miles per hour. It's made up of carbon composite construction. It weighs less than 400 pounds, and it's powered by batteries. And it can fly about 50 miles on a single charge. Now, that's not very far, but it's small enough, to sit in your driveway. You need to go to work. Hey. Beat the traffic, crawl into this thing and fly to work. Now, this is a viable mode of transportation. Now, whether or not the folks over there within the aviation community will sign off on this is a different story altogether. But the NASA Puffin is pretty cool, and I'll have a link up to it in the show notes. And I definitely want one of these for getting around Honolulu, because Honolulu traffic really sucks. And it can go high enough, it would clear the mountains, so it'd be cool. Hey, the folks are at Facebook are building their first custom data center. Facebook announced it's building its first custom data center facility in Oregon that will help social networking site maintain performance levels for its growing legion of users. So this is huge that Facebook's growing up, building their own data center. And, of course, the reason they're probably building in Oregon, cheap power and lots of rivers to cool from. So we'll see. What else have I got for you tonight? Hey, YouTube is offering experimental opt-in HTML5 video. YouTube is basically, I think this is going to be the future. I think at some point Flash will be replaced by this new HTML5 video format. Supported browsers right now are Chrome, Safari, and the Chrome Frame plugin for Internet Explorers. I don't know where you're going to be able to see this. Haven't found a link to where they've got the HTML5 video playing at. From what I've garnered so far, is that all you'll be able to see right now is a video. You won't see any of the other, outlaying technology that makes it easy to find additional videos on YouTube. But a lot of sites are going to be introducing this. I know that we're going to be looking at this at Raw Voice for video support for our podcasters that are hosting with us and those that are creating content on the internet like I do. So HTML5 supported on Chrome and Safari browsers over at YouTube. Very cool stuff. good article on Tech Dirt here, and this is about the New York Times. And I have to agree with the assessment of this article, and the title of this is The Value of the Link versus the Value of the Content. Now, we all know that New York Times has announced that it's going to be erecting a paywall throughout 2010, and that the more times you visit the New York Times, the more likelihood you'll be restricted access to the content. They're going to have some sort of amount that you'll be able to go visit for free, but if you go to the New York Times too much, it'll basically block you, and you'll have to pay for access. Now, I would agree with the assessment of Tech Dirt in saying that many of us who have linked to New York Times articles in the past may be more hesitant to do so in the future. Matter of fact, I passed on three specific New York Times articles tonight just because if I link to them and then you're coming to my website and you click into those New York Times articles and all of a sudden the paywall is flashed in front of you, you're going to get very irritated very quickly. And generally, you can find the same articles on other websites, maybe not with exactly the same content. But I think the New York Times is going to really be impacted by incoming links from external sites, because who wants to, you know, put up a website or put a link to a website where you don't think people are going to be able to link in to watch? So I think the Tech Dirt assessment is exactly correct. Of course, I have a link to that website in all the show notes tonight up on the website at geeknewscentral.com, along with in our newsletter. There's an article over on spacetoday.net talking about Earth's gravity can alter passing asteroids. There's a study that has been released saying that the surface of asteroids that pass near the Earth can be shaken by the Earth's gravity, which may explain difference in color for these objects. In a paper this week issued by Nature, scientists said that when asteroids approach to within one quarter of the distance of the moon, gravity can shake the surface of those bodies, uncovering fresh material. So this is kind of cool, and it basically, you know, shakes the surface up, and you get access to new areas that you haven't seen before. Many of these asteroids have had their surfaces peppered with different types of materials due to space weathering or interaction with solar wind. So I don't know. You know, if an asteroid gets close enough that it's being shaken by Earth's gravity, maybe it's just as well that it just continues to shake and go away. I don't want it to get them sucked in. But, you know, this, I guess, you know, why should this not be shaken? It's not just, you know, if you think about this for a second, Earth's gravity can shake the asteroid. Well, some asteroids are not as big as, you know, like the space shuttle, or, you know, like when we went did Apollo missions, were the spacecraft that we had up there shaken? I don't know about this one. Anyway, that's what they're reporting. That's what the folks at Nature are reporting. We'll see. All right, NASA safety panel has endorsed the Ares 1. So an independent safety panel recommended to NASA that it retain the Ares 1 rocket under development and not extend the shuttle program. So this was a report done in 2009, which was released last week, and many of its findings dealt with the current state and future of the agency's human spaceflight program. And the panel warned that canceling the Ares 1 launch vehicle in favor of an unidentified alternative is unwise and probably not cost-effective. So we'll see what happens if NASA does with these findings, but it's being recommended again by another organization that the shuttle's mission should come to an end this year. All right, those of you that live in tiny little apartments, I know many of our UK listeners live in small apartments or studios. Many of you that live in the major metropolitan areas like New York City or San Francisco probably have real itsy-bitsy small places, and really you don't want a big vacuum. And but the folks at Dyson, and I love Dyson vacuums. As a matter of fact, I own two of them. We had one of their original ones that we run for years and basically wore the thing out. And we're on our second Dyson vacuum. And, boy, they do a job. We got the recent one that we got that actually does pet hair. And, it does a job. It really does. But they've come out with what's called the DC, the city DC-26. It's aimed at studio apartments and other small living areas, obviously where full-size vacuum cleaners are simply not welcome. It's only, the footprint of it is big as of an A4 sheet of paper. Now, I think that's UK size, so A4 is about an 8.5 by, it's similar to an 8.5 by 11, I think. Maybe it's only 8.5 by 10, but it's only available right now in London, and it's available for £249. United States price is $403. Not any word yet on when it's going to be available in the United States, but those of you that live in the UK, you can get one of these most powerful vacuums for £249. And those of you that are living in the UK that have never experienced the power of a Dyson vacuum, let me tell you, they do the job. They really, really do. All right, the folks over at MIT, they come out with some crazy stuff. And you have to applaud them for some of the things that they think up. When we were at CES, we saw a 3D printer. You guys remember us talking about a printer that would print objects? You'd actually, if you had a CAD program, you could actually, now here's a can of Red Bull that I consumed before the show. And if you got one of these 3D printers, you could actually print a Red Bull can, not in a in metal, of course, but in a composite type of or plastic type of material through a layering. It's this thing prints, it does a layering. That was by the MakerBot. And if you guys haven't checked out the MakerBot yet, you want to. And I think that video is going to be pushed up on Geek News Central soon. So I'm giving away all the secrets on some of the cool stuff we've got for you yet. But the folks at MIT have come up with a 3D food printer. 3D food printer. You know, we saw in the Jetsons and we saw in space fantasy movies where the guy walks up to the counter and he, you know, talks to the computer or presses a button and presto, out comes his hot steaming meal. The food printer. Well, the 3D printer is mixes food and flavors from a number of canisters in order to produce something that's edible and supposedly closer to what you ordered, able to deliver elaborate combinations of food. The machine also has a rapid heating and cooling chamber that purposely, purportedly allows for the creation of flavors and textures that would be completely unimaginable through other cooking techniques. You know, I am sure that these things, this food that this thing creates, will taste just about as good as, well, let's go back to the old days. When I first joined the Navy back in 1983, they didn't have things called MREs yet. They were still eating CREs, and basically it was goop in a can. I can't imagine this stuff tasting much better. Oh, my goodness. Yep, 3D food printing. Where are we going to go next, you know? And I'm sure there's some adventurous people out there who would love to try this thing. Okay, those of you that have iPhones, the White House has introduced an official iPhone app in lieu of, oh, I'm not going to say that. This is an article on Engadget. But the White House iPhone app is available. And I had to take a little political swipe there. We're not going to do that on the show. But this is available free from the iPhone App Store. So if you're looking to pick up this app and find out what's going on with the White House, you can do that. Next article up, Wi-Fi. I've talked about Wi-Fi. I've got one of these Wi-Fi devices, long-range Wi-Fi adapter, and I've never used it with my Mac. I was using it with my PC, and I often travel with it. I didn't travel with it this time. But the Wi-Fi long-range Wi-Fi adapter has been updated for Mac software. And I really was pretty impressed with this device. It was able to really reach out and, how should I say it, detect a lot of Wi-Fi adapters in my neighborhood. So if you haven't checked this out yet, Wi-Fi-Fire, you can probably Google that and find the direct link to the device. If you've got one of those Wi-Fi signals that you try to hook into once in a while that is really weak, this device will probably get you where you need to be and able to receive it. And it just plugs into your USB slot on your PC. All right, we've all heard about ATM skimmers, right? ATM card skimmers. You guys need to really start paying attention when you are using an ATM machine anywhere other than one that you're very familiar with. The crooks have gotten really smart here. They're developing essentially a very fancy overlay that goes right over the top of maybe where their card reader goes. And they're matching the color motif of the actual ATM. This thing's actually pretty hard to detect. So, you know, when you come up to an ATM machine, make sure you're looking at that card reader. You know, look side to side. You know, make sure that it, you know, make if there's any little protrusions or if there's a hole that maybe looks like it shouldn't be there, be very careful. What this new one is being detected, actually, it was found at a Citibank ATM in Woodland Hills, California. It secretly scans your account information and PIN number, which it then can wirelessly send to a scammer. There's actually a camera embedded in this thing. So not only is it reading your magnetic strip on your card, it's transmitting. Or it's actually taking a picture of you, putting in your PIN as well. So be very aware of this. These guys are getting real smart. And pay attention to your account balances because this is really bad news. And makes you almost a little bit leery of using ATMs anywhere anymore with the level of, because, you know, people can really just, all they need is once they read that magnetic strip and once they know your PIN, you're owned. And they can take a little bit out at a time where maybe you don't quite miss it. If you and your wife have the same ATM card, maybe you thought your wife took money out or your husband did, there's actually some new, we actually put a video up on Geek News Central that talked about vendors actually being able to swipe and check cards for original, being valid, make sure that it's an original card. And you can check that video out on the website. It's up right now. But, you know, I hope these folks at ATM machines are going to start paying attention to this and putting some validator checks into their machines and make sure that, you know, they're looking for bogus cards or for copied cards and not allowing people to withdraw money with these or use them places. It's pretty scary stuff. It really is. Hey, if you are you a individual that likes to do a very fancy, not very fancy, but like to go on recipe sites? You like to pick out, you know, some cool new dishes that you would prepare for an evening meal, maybe. Well, Bing pulls up a number of popular recipe websites now. They've combined Delicious, DELISH.com, MyRecipes.com, and others to really kind of consolidate them into one search result. So I'm sure this isn't going to make the folks at MyRecipes.com very happy, but if you're looking for specific food recipes, all you got to do is put what you want to cook into the search engine at Bing, and it'll bring up a variety of search results from a variety of food websites, so you don't have to go to two or three ones looking to make sure if you have you're looking for alternative materials and so forth. But it's good news by good little feature there over there on Bing. All right, Twitter today has revamped its service. They're what is SUL? SUL is something to do with user's license. They have updated their suggested user list. Aha, I knew I was going to remember that. Twitter's revamped their suggested user list and switched to a categorized suggestions with no mass following. So they've broke it down into categories. If you want to, when you click find friends in the Twitter app, you now will see a new the selection says browse suggestions. You can link over there. And then there's a link for technology. And no, they didn't follow the geek here from Geek News Central. I'm not in that list. But there are several other notable folks in there. Actually, a couple of friends of mine are in that list. Congratulations to them. And a few people that I saw in there that I thought, this is definitely a list that has been manipulated a little bit. But anyway, pretty good list. And if you depending on what you're into, fashion, family, cuisine, charity, business, sports, science, they have a category of suggested users out there. And, of course, if you're not following me on Twitter, I hope that you will do so at Geek News. All right, iPhone and Android now account for 81% of smartphone web ads in the United States. This is pretty impressive here. 50% on it, 54% on the iPhone, 27% on the Android, followed by RIM, by Web OS, by Windows Mobile. Windows Mobile was like 3% of the actual ads being displayed, and it just goes to show you where marketers are putting their money and who they're trying to reach. I guess if you have a Palm, your chances of actually having an ad on a page that you load is pretty small. because they have the absolute smallest market share of any smartphone vendor out there. So anyway, if that's you're trying to stay away from ads, own a Palm. All right, Windows 7 growing faster than Vista, overtakes Mac OS 10. Right now, Windows controls 92.21% of the operating system market, followed by Mac OS 10 at 5.11, followed by Linux at 1.02%. Now, if you break it down by operating system market share, well, this is weird. Why would they have two images here that would give up the almost a worldwide OS market share? All right, that was worldwide OS market share. Oh, this is Ars Technica. Now, if you go to ArsTechnica.com, they're finding 64.3% Windows, 27.8% Mac, 6.41% Linux and all others, 1.32%, which is probably mobile phones and devices like that. So anyway, there's a good breakdown here of a variety of different statistics on where the operating system wars are at as far as adoption goes. Last article of tonight is the Wall Street Journal tablet confirmed. And a lot of speculation going on, of course, on what features are going to be released. One of the things that we're hearing is that it's going to be able to recognize your face as you hold the tablet to your, you know, hold the tablet up. It will actually automatically log you in. We're hearing that. We're hearing it's a device that's going to be able to be used for all the family. It's also going to embrace a lot of old media, which makes me kind of fall into line with we're hearing about a lot of magazines and so forth actually building content for the Apple tablet. So we're just here about a little more than a week away from finding out what really is going on. And, well, we'll see. We'll see at that point. All right, let me look at the time here. Where are we at? Oh, we're doing good. I got off through all the regular content tonight, and I'm ready to head into our voicemail. As always, you have comment on tonight's show, geeknews@gmail.com, geeknews@gmail.com. Voicemail hotline is 619-342-7365. Our one and only voicemail tonight is from Tom in Chicago, and I did listen to about the first 5 seconds of it, so I'll go ahead and play this now. Then after that, we'll actually get into the emails. And those of you on Ustream, thanks for hanging out with me here. Don't worry, after the show's over tonight, I'll hang out with you for a little bit, answer any questions you may have. Here comes the first voicemail.
Hey, Todd, it's Tom calling from Chicago. I just wanted to do a quick shout-out thanking you guys for putting on the content that you did for the CES show. Enjoyed it immensely, so thank you very much. Nicely done to everybody on that team. I was calling to just put a quick shout-out. I attended, our school PTA had a elevator tech, it's not an elevator, I'm so sorry. They had a seminar that was given by their IT department or the IT people that manage the elevators, the computers, so sorry, at their school, and they were trying to give parents an idea on how to keep their kids safe from the internet and steps you can take. I have to tell you that I am geeky, maybe not as much as some of the audience members that listen to you. My point is that I cannot tell you how much I learned during that session and also how many parents are totally misinformed and have no idea how to keep kids safe. You know, although it's difficult to do, there are ways of doing it from bad things on the internet. I was calling because I thought it would be a great idea. I'm sure there are probably many IT people out there that might be out of jobs or out of work. But I think this would be a great field for anybody with computer experience to go into in helping out families set up their wireless internet connections, their computers so that they're safe, all that stuff. So this is just an idea, you know, an idea that I thought of when I was coming home, thinking, you know what, if there are people out there in this audience that don't have jobs or don't have, are looking for work, I don't think a lot of, you know, I think that IT work is probably not coming back for a long time. But seriously consider going after the independent consulting market for providing computer security for families and their computers and giving advice. That stuff changes all the time. I think that probably many of you out there could provide service much better than the Geek Squad and all those guys out there. And it's a position I think would be taken very with great responsibility, obviously. And I would think that anybody who could get into a couple of homes or have a couple of customers, that kind of information or that kind of referral work would be forthcoming after that. So I just want to get that off my brain, because I've got a lot on my brain right now with work and everything. And so I just want to, you know, put a shout out. So anybody out there that is in the IT field or is, you know, seriously consider going in, you know, becoming an independent consultant, starting your own business, basically providing at-home consultation services for families to make sure that their internets are locked down or, you know, they're providing the safest form of computers and their computers are protected. And I think you could do, anybody could do quite well with that. So anyway, that's my multi-million dollar idea for the day. Hopefully somebody can run with that and it'll help them out monetarily, and hopefully it helps out one of your listeners out there, Todd. So anyway, keep up the good work. My brain is fried. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Hey, thanks for calling. And you know what I would love is, would you consider writing a guest blog post on Geek News Central on kind of summarizing what they covered? I had to suppress a sneeze there on all of you. I would really like to see what they recommended for tools, things that they told people. I'm assuming they gave you some sort of a handout, or did you take notes? If you did, I'd really like to have you consider writing a guest post on the website. I think it would be very valuable, and I think you've got a great idea there for someone that's looking for work. You know, today, when someone says, I'm a consultant, I will caution you. Usually when someone today tells me they're a consultant, it means to me that they're unemployed. So maybe come up with a different term for that. Now, obviously, I'm out here in Jacksonville doing consulting. No, I'm not unemployed. I'm very employed. So I guess I should take a taste of my own medicine. But definitely don't label yourself as a social media expert. I think Andy McCaskey and I were talking today. There's something like 18,000 social media experts on Twitter alone, or social ninjas or whatever they are. Definitely there's some opportunity out there. I think you're right, Tom. But love to have you write a guest blog post again over at Geek News Central on that specific topic. And just let me know if you will, if you want to, or just send me this, you know, if you have any notes or anything, I'd be happy to put it up myself. All right, let me go ahead and get into the email comments. Of course, if you have email comments on tonight's show, geeknews@gmail.com, geeknews@gmail.com. First email comes from Pete. He says, Todd, got a few responses to items in your show. You mention something about copper wire that scrubs CO2 from the atmosphere. I seem to remember that I learned in junior high that vegetation did the same thing. Why don't we go plant some more trees instead of stringing wire all over the place? I agree, Pete. That's a great idea. And, if you've got a lot of concrete jungle that is, you live in an area that's concrete jungle that has just, or you have areas of dirt, put some grass or some vegetation in there. I know sometimes it's a pain to maintain it, but you're right, Pete. I think it'll do just as well as this sucking CO2 out of the air as this copper wire would do. He also goes on to say, you've also asked for comments from us concerning what our thoughts were on the potential use of video content from the web. First, I love the audio format podcast and audio in general, as it lets me do something else while listening to the content. For instance, I listened to show 544 while taking my walk last night, and then finished it on my way to work this morning. Its information being communicated is such that the point being made can be grasped solely through audio, then it fits. Video, on the other hand, demands that you devote your attention to it, and it is hard to get the message if you turn your eyes away from it to pay attention to something else. The content that you're putting up from CES is the right type of content for video. You're showing us these new products, and we get to watch the booth person demo the gadget. I've been watching these on HDTV via Apple TV. Bottom line is that video content demands more of my time and needs to be compelling, has a lot of competition from traditional broadcast video content. So if you're taking the plunge and offering more video content, make sure it's the correct type of content and not just something that can be communicated via audio. By the way, I think we're a long way from internet video content taking over traditional broadcast. In other words, cable and satellite. There are TVs in just about every household in this country, and we've got very long way to get broadband, that type of reach. I'm a listener since the single-digit show number of days. Keep up the great work, Pete in Albuquerque. Pete, you're exactly right, and that's one of the reasons why this show, as we move throughout the year, will be making significant tries to enhance the video content that we're putting together. Obviously, watching me for an hour and 15 minutes or whatever it may be, just talking into a microphone, looking at the camera, sometimes looking at the computer, is not that compelling. And I understand that's why 99.9999% of you listen to this show via the audio podcast. You download it, listen it at your convenience. That is one reason why Andy and I and Jeff Ray have been talking about some new series of type of podcasts that we may be doing this year, which will end up being compelling video content that we think will excite all of you if we're able to get it formatted correctly and splice it in the way we want to with today's technology. So I'm glad you're watching the content on Apple TV. I'm glad you're enjoying it that way. But I'm telling you, Mitsubishi and many other manufacturers are coming out with TVs with computers in them. And I did an interview at one of the events that you'll be seeing here shortly where Mitsubishi's loading Boxy in every new plasma that it's selling. And I think that should get all of us excited. We've talked about making it easier for you to consume alternative content, and when it's built right into your television set, then it's a lot easier just to use your remote control to go over and look at a variety of different content that's online. Good feedback. Thank you for that, Pete. It is greatly appreciated. Got an email from Susabel. She says, "Hey, Todd, regarding wiki entries, there may have been a time when Wikipedia was a place to be listed, but these days Wikipedia is pretty much an empty resource. It's a good place to jump off from sometimes, but mostly I avoid it. Most academic environments completely skew it. I wouldn't worry about your listing or lack thereof on Wikipedia. That is a dead fish floating as far as I'm concerned. Regarding personal brands, I've heard you talk about this before. While I own 14 web domains and may own more in the future, not a single one of these domains describes me as a whole. In fact, I don't think that I could create one website as my brand and be happy with that. Like many people these days, I am very eclectic. I have interests in so many things that they are best described as discordant. I have multiple identities depending on what I'm working on. It may be my technology writing or my fiction writing or the work I do with people in the spiritual path, or the children entertaining I do with my husband, my interest in circus history or homeschooling I do, or my art or my work as a disability service specialist. They're just not one Susabel. There are a dozen facets of me that all should have their own space. To create a brand of me would be like trying to herd a bunch of cats into a closet. It just isn't going to work, and I know plenty of other people like me who have these multiple interests and identities, and creating one brand is virtually impossible. I'm Facebook, but I don't consider that any sort of dilution of who I am or my work in various fields. It's just a place where I catch up with friends and family and snark about politics. I am on LinkedIn, but that is related to my job and only my job. I use the various domain names I own to address some aspects like our entertainment business, some of my writings, etc., but I have no main webpage, although I own SusaBell.com as a domain. Great, that's a good one. And Whit, now how to begin to create a brand around that web domain and who I am. What's get highlighted? What gets left behind? The questions completely stalled me in any creative forward progress on a website of or brand of me. I almost think it's not as important to create the brand as you and some other tech bloggers seem to think. I think that brand can box you in and leave little room for growth or expansion. Isn't there room for multiple brands regarding a person? Just something to think about, Susabel. Whew, you put me on the spot here. But you know, what I think is that even though I have a personal blog at toddblog.com, I very rarely post to it. And things that I post to it would definitely be stuff that I would never probably talk about in this show. So that really isn't my brand, but I consider a brand here on what I want to be considered my primary web presence, I guess. And obviously I have a specific goals with that brand in building it and growing it. And I was talking with a company today, actually, about my brand, some of the things that I'm doing and I'm going to be doing. And they were pretty excited about that, as well as I am. But I understand where you're coming from, that you have a large interest. Now, I guess the only thing I would do is it's very hard to really talk about all those things that you do. If you did, you would spend all your time writing about what your interest was in either writing or your job or circus history or homeschooling. It could be a full-time job just writing about one of those topics. But I would recommend, at least from the interim, is on SusaBell.com, maybe from time to time, you know, change up every different article, write about something else you're interested in. Again, maybe it's not what you want to do, but at least it will show your diversity. And I think that's more interesting than anything else. I had no idea before your email what some of your interests were. But if I was subscribed to SusaBell.com and you talked about homeschooling, and matter of fact, that's something that my wife and I are considering for my daughter, if we're not able to get her into the high school we want to get her into, maybe that's a topic that I'd want to say, call SusaBell on the phone and say, SusaBell, give me a data dump on homeschooling. And so, you know, it's just one of those things that where interests may cross, I think it's good to have, you know, if you feel like putting stuff online, to do so. If you don't feel that that is information you want to be on the web, then obviously don't do that. And you also want to be careful of putting topics on the web that, you know, could hurt you and your professional side as well. Not everyone are homeschooling fans. Some people are, you know, downright against it. And so, you know, that would be something you would have to consider. Would that ever affect your job, or would you care if anyone knew, or would you even want to work with someone that had an adverse opinion to it? I don't know. But very good email. Thanks, Susabel, for writing. And probably this is going to open a good conversation point on the website or on the show. Thanks for your email. I definitely appreciate it. And, of course, Susabel is one of our contributing bloggers at Geek News Central, and you'll see her byline is Susabel on the website. And she writes about tech and things that she's interested in as well in that space. So a very diverse lady. Thank you so much. All right, next email is from Trucker Tom. He says, hey, German scientists develop fast-acting germ killer. Fact-acting formula tackles even the toughest germ. Scientists say disinfectant could have a huge impact. A new fast-acting disinfectant is effective against bacteria, viruses, and other germs, could help stop the spread of deadly infections in hospitals, German scientists said on Wednesdays. So they've come up with a new type of disinfectant. The German formula works against a wide range of germs and drug-resistant bacteria and other so-called superbugs that impact hospitals. So a good article on this, and this is over at alertnet.org. Thanks, Tom, for that email. Got an email here from another email from Trucker Tom. How did school staffers get insulin instead of flu vaccine? This is an article that was a report over on abcnews.com. Apparently, staff members at Wellesley, Massachusetts School went to the nurse last Friday. They expected to be injected with a vaccine for the H1N1 flu. What they received instead was a shot of insulin, resulting in with low blood sugar. That's scary stuff, folks. Can even let's say you're a diabetic and you'd already taken your shot for the day and you went and got another shot of insulin? Oh my goodness, this is huge. Very scary stuff. Anyway, be careful. Make sure when you're getting your flu shot, make sure they're getting it out of a vial that says H1N1 on it, not insulin or something to that effect. But this is scary stuff here. Someone could have died. Very, very, very bad. I got an email from Russ. He says, "Hey, Todd, you were monitoring some Twitter monitoring services on Show 5-4. I wanted to share one with you by a programmer here in Austin called Friend or Follow. The service allows you to see who's following you that you're not following back, or who you are following that's not. In other words, you can check who's following you. The service also allows you to download a CSV file with this information. I find the service to be easy and useful. Friendorfollow.com. And I've used that before to try to kind of even up my Twitter list, but I've had a tough time behind on adding people. Hey, got an email from Bree. She says, "Hey, did you see this one from Government Computer News? The Institute of Electrical and Electronics Engineers is expected to release a standard for 100 gigabit Ethernet networking in June, and they should spur deployment of high-speed networks outside pilot programs and test beds." Looks like I'm going offline on Ustream. I got an email here I guess that's the end of the email. Anyway, folks, that's all the content for tonight. I want to thank you for hanging out with me here, and I appreciate all of the emails and the voicemail comments that have come in. You can definitely drop me a line at geeknews@gmail.com or call the voicemail hotline at +1-619-342-7365. I'll be back with you here from Florida on Tuesday with the regular show, of course. If you want to watch on Ustream, join us on Monday evening for the live show. And I'll be probably starting between 8 and 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time if you want to check it out. And I want to thank everyone for hanging out with me, of course. And stay subscribed. Share the show with your friends and family. Let us know what you think about some of the great content we're putting up there on the website and some of these video interviews that we took. More content coming every day, so you want to stay subscribed to Geek News Central on the special media feed. Again, it's been my pleasure to bring you this show. We'll see you on Monday for a Tuesday release. Everyone take care and aloha.